Refuge until I am
enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, and the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, and the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clinging. The ground is covered with flowers, sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four countries, ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this, an offering as a Buddha realm, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pure lands. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Sapariwa Ratnamanda Pudzamega Samunda Samayama. So, welcome. So let's do a review and catch up to where we're at. So, the title of our text is...
The Beautiful Ornament of the Three Visions.
Okay. Written by...
Murchen Koncho
Kundra. Okay. You don't get to answer anymore. Okay, open book test. Okay, and it's divided into two main sections, right? Our text.
Right.
First one is?
Preliminaries.
And the second one is?
Practice.
The actual practice. Okay, good. We've done the preliminaries. What are the preliminaries, by the way?
Refuge and faith.
Oh, you studied.
Well, I just watched.
You can't answer anymore. Anymore.
One by one, they're dropping. Okay. Good. So now we're in the main teachings. So if you want to look on page 19, open book test here. So we've got three visions. Yeah. But what are the names of the three visions?
Impure vision.
Okay, impure vision.
Vision of experience.
Vision of experience.
And the pure vision.
And the pure vision. Okay. Why do we practice the instruction on the impure vision?
To produce renunciation.
Okay, produce renunciation. And why do we practice the vision of experience? To produce
aspiration.
Okay, and the pure vision produces what?
Enthusiasm.
Enthusiasm, okay. What does Lama Jampa say that enthusiasm means? Trick question.
Joyous effort.
It means you're completely interested in the Dharma. That's what Lama said. You're completely interested in the Dharma. We're going to find out tonight. Maybe, well, we'll see. We'll see. Okay. So we are going to do the section on producing renunciation. Page 20, there's three parts to that. What's the first one there? Somebody can just read it. A. The faults of worldly existence, okay, is the first one. That produces renunciation. And then the second one?
Instructions on the difficulty of obtaining the prerequisites in order to evoke diligence.
Okay, so that's the famous precious human rebirth, which we haven't covered yet, but we will soon. And then the third one is?
On virtuous and non-virtuous deeds and their results in order to show it is to be accepted and what is to be rejected.
Okay, so what to do and what not to do.
Right.
Okay, so the first one, the faults of worldly existence, there's a bunch of different sections of this one. There's the three kinds of suffering. So what's the first kind of suffering?
Suffering.
Suffering of suffering. So what's that?
Illness, injury,
horrible
mental or physical suffering in intents.
Yeah. So in this text, they use the example of the three lower realms and the hell realm being in this being this example. But of course, we have the suffering too. Mm-hmm. So this is what we normally call suffering, the suffering of suffering, when
it's
something
the
hurts.
The awareness of it, really, isn't it?
Yeah. So it could be mental, it could be emotional, it could be physical, but it hurts. Okay, so there's the suffering of suffering. And we went through the three lower realms. By the way, what are the three lower realms? Hell realm,
hungry ghosts,
and the animals. Okay, we went through those. And then we went to the suffering of change, the second kind of suffering. So what's that in a word or in a nutshell?
Impermanence.
Yeah. So can you give an example?
No, there's nothing ever lasts.
Yeah.
Happiness doesn't last on the worldly planes. It's not until you're enlightened that you actually experience
true happiness.
Yeah. The ice cream tastes good. You finish the cone. There's no more ice cream. It's changed. It's gone. Now, some people, the first one, the suffering of suffering, is obvious. Everybody gets that. The second one, some people go, well, wait a minute, but the ice cream tasted good. I was happy. I was happy when I was eating the ice cream. Okay. Are you happy when it's over? Well, yeah, but not as much, you know. So there's some kind of like transition from pure suffering to the ice cream cone is finished. It started out good, but it's over. Okay. So that's the suffering of change.
You get a scratch on it.
Or you just get bored with it. The thrill is gone.
I bought a new car once, and I bought it from the dealer in Vancouver, and I was bringing it back on the ferry, and somebody hit me on the ferry and damaged my car. I didn't even get it home. So I know what you're talking about, Steve. It was no longer a new car. Yeah. Yeah,
were you
it definitely.
For happiness when you bought that car?
I was happy when I bought it, but it changed. Okay. And we went through the suffering of change. And what in the text, what were the examples used? What were the realms?
Was it like for old age?
Human.
And?
Asuras.
Asuras or demigods. And?
Worldly gods.
Worldly gods, okay. Those are the examples that are used in the text, just to flesh it out a little bit for us. Okay, so we went through a long section of those different realms and how they suffer, and even the gods fall. And that brought us to where we are now, which is page 48. The third kind of suffering, the suffering of conditional phenomena. So this is progressing towards more difficult to grasp. So we'll see what happens here this evening. It starts out with a sort of a general overview, and it says, generally, that which is known as the suffering of conditional phenomena is the karma causing feelings of happiness, unhappiness, and neutrality, and the five grasping aggregates which are flung about due to the cause of attachment to existence. So there's quite a bit just in that sentence, so let's see what we got here. So why do you think it says the karma causing feelings of happiness, unhappiness, and neutrality? I thought happiness wasn't suffering.
Different kinds of happiness.
Uh-huh.
Well, it depends on what you've done in the past.
There's permanent happiness. There's transcendental happiness.
Okay.
There's unceasing happiness. And then there's transitory or changing happiness.
Oh, which do we have?
Transitory, changing.
Yeah. Condition. But this is... Okay. So it says happiness, unhappiness, and neutrality. Neutrality is unhappy? I mean, is suffering?
That's a poor translation.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see. Let's go on to the five grasping aggregates. So what does that refer to? We talked about aggregates a long time ago.
Expectations and attachment and... getting all the things that we don't want and not getting the things that we do want.
Okay, that actually comes later. So let's just see, what are the five aggregates?
Form.
Feeling.
Perception.
Memory.
Consciousness.
Okay. Memory is sometimes translated in lots of different ways. I've seen it translated in lots of different words, so it could be you might see it written some other word in another text. But those are the five aggregates. And when those five aggregates come together, what do they appear to make?
Sentient beings.
Yeah, us. Mm-hmm. Us. Sentient beings. And then there's this word grasping, which is going to come up again here. And these are flung about due to the cause of attachment to existence. So I would just underline that word attachment, because that's a key component here for our suffering, right? And then existence, when they say existence here, what does this refer to?
Worldly existence
or?
True existence.
Samsara. Samsara, yeah.
Cycle.
Cyclic existence. Okay, the round and round without meaning.
Continuous rebirth.
Yeah, rebirth. Meaningless.
Addiction.
Mm-hmm. And actually, doesn't that aversion have to be there also as a twin of attachment? It's just the negative way of grasping things.
Yes, and also neutrality is in there too, if we want to elaborate it. Mm-hmm. All three, right?
So was there another word for neutrality?
Indifference.
Yes, indifference.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah.
From the moment one obtains the five aggregates, one naturally does not go beyond suffering. So that's a blanket statement that's going to be elaborated on, but just the phenomenon of conditioned existence is itself suffering. Okay? This is a big jump from the first and the second kind of suffering. Still, childish sentient beings fail to recognize themselves, that is, the five aggregates, to be suffering, because they are distracted by other suffering. Like the ice cream cone, this tastes good. I'm not suffering, I'm having a great ice cream cone. It's hot today. You forget you're suffering, right?
Until the diabetes comes along, caused by the ice cream.
But when you finish the ice cream, you can always have another one.
However, my experience is the second one doesn't taste as good as the first one, and the third one usually makes me sick.
So, there's a key word in there I'd like to highlight.
Yeah?
It's childish.
Yeah? What do you make that to be?
It's essential to the statement, from my point of view, is in that it's essential for children to have that imputation of true existence. We get here, we're born, and we have no idea where we are or what to do. And then we have people surrounding us, our community, informing us, and they make things stand out. That's the moon. I can remember my mother doing this. I mean, I could see everything, but I didn't differentiate. And she said, "That's the moon." I'm like, "Well, she said, see, that's the moon." So she made the moon stand out. And all of a sudden, within, you know, over time, everything is standing out. So I've become a member of the community, where I have agreements with everybody as to what's going on. Mm-hmm. And as a child, you have to do that. You have to impute existence upon the background so that things stand out.
But we do that all through our lives.
But that's what happens if we continue with that childish mind and we don't mature and see things as they really are, then we're in the trap. Mm-hmm. So that statement of childish,
mm-hmm,
is key. It's important because it's something we have to do and we have to stop doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Childish sentient beings fail to recognize themselves, the five aggregates, to be suffering because they're distracted by other suffering. Through attachment, there's that word again, through attachment they are deceived into believing themselves to be really happy. However, the noble ones, who are the noble ones? The Buddhas. The noble ones see it, that is, the five aggregates, as suffering and always renounce it. So there's a few sentences in this paragraph that I think merit notation. And then the scriptural reference is the Abhidharma Kosha. Would somebody like to read that for us?
If a single hair be placed upon the palm, there is no pain or discomfiture. But if it is inserted in the eye, it engenders discomfort and pain. Since fools are like the hand's palm, they do not perceive the hair of worldly suffering, while the noble ones, like the eye, always reject it.
Interesting quote. Would somebody like to comment on that?
I hear the ice cream truck.
I haven't heard in decades.
But we're not attached.
Wow. Kids
10 minutes ago, we would have all been running out there. So what about this hair quotation? I would like to hear somebody's comment on that.
It could be a contact lens, too.
Yeah.
It does.
There's certain things that are obvious discomfort because of our sensitivity or weakness. There's so many ways that we can hurt ourselves and see ourselves as being hurt.
So we don't perceive it, even though it's suffering, but the Buddhas do perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're constantly being fooled that we're not suffering, basically, mm-hmm. That's what it's saying, right?
Mm-hmm. This may be an example of indifference.
Uh-huh.
You can just completely overlook it.
Sorry?
You overlook it. You're ignorant toward it.
Yeah.
I think that's the key word, is ignorance itself. Really, ignorance is it. We are ignorant of suffering.
Mm-hmm. One of the three poisons.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ignorance, aversion, attachment.
So we had the listening part, we had the scriptural reference part, and now we're going to get the reflection part. To reflect upon this suffering, one should consider A, the suffering that activities are never ending, B, the suffering of not being satisfied by desire, and C, the suffering of not being wearied by birth and death. And we're going to go into more detail about these now. And we're going to read about the suffering that activities are never ending, and quote from Aryadeva. Would somebody like to read Aryadeva's quote?
With efforts, our work is done, and effortlessly it perishes. Even though it is so, still you are not devoid of attachment to work.
Mm-hmm. Anybody in our society attached to work?
Only because you get money.
No, but I mean really attached, you know, like work.
Well, we have a word for it. Workaholic.
Workaholic.
There's people who actually commit suicide when they become retired because they don't know what else there is in life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very sad.
Look at the opioid epidemic. Mm-hmm. People have nothing to do.
You're mentioning the word workaholic reminds me. Karen and I did a course in International Buddhist Academy a few years ago, Radical Altruism. Mm-hmm. And one of the instructors was His Holiness, the 42nd Sakyatrizin. Mm-hmm. And I, to this day, it's imprinted on my memory. He said, don't be a workaholic if you want to practice Dharma. Mm-hmm. You know, people that have businesses and just work day and night for their business, or people that have big, important positions, you know, management or whatever, and that's mm-hmm. all they do. That's all they do.
It's all an illusion.
Well, and that's what our culture celebrate, mm-hmm. promotes, and rewards.
And conversely, Geshe pointed out that one of the endowments is what all human beings wish for, leisure. Precisely the opposite.
Let's continue reading. Anybody?
Even though one works up to the point of old age and death, one has not time to finish one's work. Even though unfinished, one does not have non-attachment to them.
Yeah, so there's that word non-attachment. So it isn't so much the work itself, although that's certainly a temptation, but this attachment, you know, this obsession, this grasping, you know, is really the problematic part. And it never finishes. You know, people will be in their coffin texting, don't close the lid, I have one more text to send. You know, it's just endless, never finishing. Even when you retire.
Well, we have in the West, certainly, I think also in Asia, we have attached self-worth to work.
Yeah.
You are what your role is. Right?
Yeah.
Identity.
Oh my God, in Japan, it's like that. You are your company. Like
that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
People die from overwork.
They haven't even they a word for a that. Word for yeah. It. Yeah.
It's sad. You know, I had a homestay student from Japan staying with me, and she was appalled at how many long weekends we had and stuff, and she called mm-hmm. us Canadians lazy.
Yeah.
You're also lazy.
Many years ago, there was a Zen priest who used to come and visit the Dharma Center. He'd come every year for a visit. And he used to say, oh, your houses are so dirty. In Japan, we clean our houses 3 times a day. And I said, yeah, but they're the size of a washroom, you know, compared to ours. Would somebody like to continue reading here? Furthermore?
I'll read it.
Okay.
Furthermore, farmers smear the blood of their feet upon stones and the blood of their hands on wood. Traders make their own country as a foreign one and make foreign countries as their homeland. Even though they do not have the opportunity, even for a second, to associate with their own relatives and loved ones, still they have not gone beyond the need to suffer more. As it was said in the Bodhicarya Avatara, some wretched desirers are utterly fatigued by working the whole day, and having returned home, their weary bodies sleep like corpses. Mm-hmm. Some have the troubles of traveling abroad and the hardships of living far away. Even for many years, they cannot see their wives and children as they wish to.
And it continues, the faults of attachment, there's the word again, to work, described in the... Now, I never found the English translation of this, although it is a Mahayana sutra. Day and night without other thoughts, they think constantly of food and drink and do not aspire to virtues. These are the faults of those who delight in work. Their attachments increase. Mm-hmm. They desire savory food. They are not pleased by small favors. Mm-hmm. These are the faults of those who delight in work. They delight in many followers. They are very miserable if those followers decrease. And they roll about in pain like asses. These are faults of those who delight in work. One should diligently practice the methods of departing from attachment to works, which are never finished, like ripples of water. That is suffering of activities that are never ending. There's another example given that it's never ending, like a man's beard never stops growing, you have to keep shaving. People say, oh, you're growing a beard. No, I'm not. I didn't do anything. It just happened, you know. It just never ends. Okay, so the next one is the suffering of not being satisfied by desire. Who would like to read?
I'll read it, I guess. As it was said in the...
Yeah, I don't know the English for that one either. It's the Lalita Vistara Sutra. It's a sutra.
Desire is the root of suffering and impairs meditation and penance. Desire is like a drink of salty water, which causes thirst to increase again.
Okay, so here we are. What realm do we live in?
Human.
Desire.
The desire realm. So this is our home. Drinking salty water endlessly. Or if you want to get really graphic, licking honey off the edge of a razor. Okay, you want to continue there, Nicole?
Furthermore, one should think, though there is not one object of desire that could be identified as not having been enjoyed by us since our beginningless lifetimes, still, not only are we not content, but attachment to our desires increases. Thus, through the power of careless behavior, we perpetually roam about in worldly existence. There is not a single suffering of which it can be said, I did not experience this. Further, having been born from the womb, all the mother's milk I have drunken, if collected, would be more than the waters of the four oceans. As it was said in the
Letter to a Friend by Nagarjuna,
while each has already drunk more milk than the four oceans, still worldlings who follow other ordinary people will have to drink even more than that.
Are there any words here that jump out for any of you? Or any phrases?
The ocean.
Ocean of?
Suffering? What are you saying? Ignorance?
Ocean of milk.
Yeah.
What kind of milk?
Mother's milk.
Mother's milk. In other words,
rebirth,
endless. Yeah. What else? Anything else?
Well, the fact that we use this word already, it's as if we never learn anything from lifetime to lifetime.
Yeah. There's your ignorance again, huh?
Mm-hmm.
How about worldlings? What would that refer to?
Those who are living in the experience of suffering.
Worldlings who follow other ordinary people.
They're ordinary people too. Maybe.
Worldlings who follow.
How about people who aren't?
They're not interested in the Dharma.
Not interested in Dharma or spirituality or religion or, you
they
know.
They like the mundane, not the super mundane.
Yeah. I think it was Dzongtso Kinzi Rinpoche who said, from the point of view of a worldly person, spiritual practice is ridiculous. And from the point of view of a spiritual person, worldly activities are ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. So the worldlings who follow other... What are they saying? Worldlings who follow other ordinary people will have to drink even more than that. In other words, they're still going to be suffering on the wheel. Right? Well, how about there's not a single suffering of which it can be said, I did not experience this? Or as Geshe-la said, the Buddha was here 2,600 years ago. How come you're not enlightened yet?
It's been a while.
How many lifetimes in 2,600 years? Yeah. But that doesn't wake you up. Let's keep reading about hell realms. Who wants to read about hell realms?
Moreover, having been born in the hells, one has eaten iron chunks and drunk molten bronze countless times. Having been born in the hungry ghost realm, one has eaten pus and blood countless times. Having been born in the animal realm, one has eaten the flesh of one's own kind and one's own flesh countless times. As it was said in the sutra.
Yeah, now actually, right. I forgot. I did actually find the translation for that. But I found two different English translations. So one of them is the sutra of the detailed narration of the sport of the Buddha. Or another translation called it the play in full. That's the title anyway. Do you want to go ahead and read it?
Sure. Though one person obtains all his desires, not content with that, he searches for more. If one relies on desire, one's attachment will increase and the servants of desire are chopped into pieces.
Now we're going to talk about wealth. Here's another one that's interesting. Shantideva is going to tell us about wealth. Because of the torments of accumulating, guarding, excuse me, and losing it, wealth should be known as boundless misery. There's no opportunity for liberation from the world's suffering for those who are distracted by the attachment to wealth. So there again, attachment. I always underline wherever I see attachment just to emphasize the attachment part of it is really what they're getting at. Desires have many misfortunes such as these and the like, but little relish, just like the tasting of some dry grass by cart-pulling beasts. For the sake of a little relish, which is not rare, and can even be earned by beasts, they destroy this difficult to obtain propitious opportunity with agonizing works. So what is this propitious opportunity?
The opportunity to let go of that attachment.
And what's the general title that we put on it?
Enlightenment.
Our opportunity now.
Renunciation.
Yeah, and what's the general title for the opportunity? The precious
rebirth?
Human rebirth. The PHR, as I call it in my notes.
Right.
Which I keep promoting because I'm so excited that we're going to get to it really soon. Yeah, it's this really incredible opportunity. I mean, we really need to stop and realize how much merit it took to be sitting here in this room tonight and studying this text. It's really beyond our comprehension. Okay, we have finally arrived at this next one, which I'm going to not read and let somebody else read.
I'll read it.
Okay, read it.
The faults of attachment to women are outlined in...
A sutra.
In every way, women are the destroyers of wealth and the root of the lower realms. How could happiness be obtained for men who desire women? Women are causers of destruction. Therefore, if one desires benefit for oneself in this life and the next, one must renounce women.
Isn't it really just sex they're talking about?
May I give a caveat to this? I once knew a man who came to me for some healing, and he said, "A day without a woman is a wasted day for me." There were two women living in the house, myself and another. I said, "Well, you are here for 10 days, and so it will be a great waste then." We carried on. That man improved in health, but he went home, and as soon as his wife had left on a trip, he invited a woman. He died that night of overexcitement.
Of what?
Overexcitement.
Overexcitement.
But is it women or is it sex?
It is desire.
Right. Mm-hmm. I just find it interesting that because in Christianity, woman is desire as well,
she
right?
Is
evil Eve.
Yeah, it's
have
the big
a little problem
of
that.
Thinking with what's below your belt.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And not being able to get past that.
Yeah.
And so the problems, for example, in certain countries where women are forced to completely cover themselves, even old women, because after all, they might arouse desire.
At the same time, gay men have out-of-control sexual urges as well.
Well, yes, but
so it's the desire.
Not women, necessarily.
No, I know. That's why it's the desire.
Desire is desire.
Not the gender, necessarily.
Right, so this could be said about men for women. Like, if there was a person or a woman that was overly sexed up, let's say, then it would be, like, renounce men.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was written a long time ago, so we understand.
Right.
Ah. Thank you. Karen, you want to comment on this?
No, I was still mulling over how Linda put her input. It was a very, very good way of, I know the example that she's talking about, too.
Okay. Laurel, you want to comment about this?
Not really.
Okay. Stephen, you want to comment about this?
Well, it's pretty hard to be convinced that the gentleman that died from overexcitement wasn't going to die anyway. So, depends what his motivation was, and I mean, overexcitement, underexcitement?
I was being very discreet.
I beg your pardon?
I was being very discreet.
Oh, I wouldn't know.
Yeah. There is a certain, amongst a certain group of people who seek sensation. One of the things that they will go to is the very limit of death itself.
Mm-hmm. That's a type of sexual pleasure.
Yes.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, again, I didn't know his motivation, yeah. So yeah. I couldn't say. Mm-hmm. There's lots of different ways to experience all kinds of things.
Experience what?
Everything.
Yeah.
Desire is definitely a problem.
Sorry, I guess I was going to say, I guess back then, too, that they're saying that women are destroyers of wealth, so that the men would have to work to provide for the women all the time, everything they desired. That's usually...
But back then, women couldn't own property or
exactly.
Even work themselves.
That's what
right?
I mean.
So it's kind
yeah.
of a setup.
Yeah.
That's
true. So one point was raised that this was written 500 years ago.
Yeah.
Where was it written?
Asia, at least.
Hmm?
Asia, at least.
Yeah, it was written in Tibet. Orchen Kunchuk Lundrup was a Tibetan. And where did he live? What kind of society?
Patriarchal society.
Patriarchal and?
Feudal.
Feudal and?
Monastic.
So who's the audience?
Other monks.
Other monks.
If it was nuns.
Well, that's the next question. Go ahead.
It would be different. He would be talking about...
the temptations of men.
Yes, that's right. And how it's not worth it.
Well, we know that.
But maybe the young monks don't know. Young nuns, I'm sorry.
So I'm going to ask Karen, have you ever heard a female teacher teach this kind of teaching?
I've only known one female teacher, and she sticks to the monastic teaching. Very, very brilliant and very conservative.
Okay.
Traditional.
Okay. Has anybody else heard a female teacher teach this passage? Okay. Well, I have. And what do they say? What do you think they said? Not that. They said what everybody here has been saying. Well, you just flip the gender or, you know, it's not about gender. It's about attachment. It's about desire. It's about obsession. It's about
grasping.
It's about, that's what it's about.
It's also about power.
Yeah.
Power, yeah.
So are there any female teachers in Sakya, Karen? Say historically?
Yes. Did you not get a copy of that book?
I did, but I want you to say it.
Oh, Okpenard wrote this extremely well-researched and amazing book about the Jetsunma phenomenon within Sakya. And there is a whole lineage of Jetsunmas. A Jetsunma is someone who's a scholar as well as a member of the ruling family.
A female member.
Female member of the ruling family, and who is given as much access to teachings and teachers and opportunities for retreat and whole vast areas of land that produce products that take in money that will pay for her living. So this is something that is passed on to another new generation of Jetsunmas, and there are many Jetsunmas, Sakya Jetsunmas, who have been teachers not only of male Sakya masters, but also of male and female adepts of other traditions as well. So it's not an exclusively Sakya effect. Mm-hmm.
Just to add to that, Karen, everything that you say is true. I think just also the realization that many of these Jetsunas have been realized beings.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, thank you. And that book is in the library. Please don't take it home, but you're welcome to look at it. And are there any Jetsumas alive today?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Jetsuma Chimi Luding Rinpoche is married to the brother of Luding Kenchen Rinpoche. He's the head of the Nyingma sect, and his brother is a prince of the lineage. And it's common in Nyingma sects to have intermarriage between non-monastic males and females of I don't know. I'm getting it too kind of complicated, but there's a younger Jetsuma Trinley Palter Rinpoche, who is the eldest daughter of His Holiness the 42nd and Dhammapuchala Kalden. And there there are others as well. It can be given as a title without all of those previous qualifications to someone who is fulfilling a role of a female adept. And that title, for instance, was given by His Holiness the 41st Sakya Treason to the wife of the consort of the Nepali descendant of the Ranas, who is a who was in retreat for 12 years and who came out of retreat a few years ago. So she was given the Jetsuma title about 8 or 10 years ago.
Thank you. So Jetsuma Chimi Luding that you mentioned lives in Richmond, B.C.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And does anybody know her particular, what's the word? One of the things historically she's particularly noted for?
Vajrayogini.
Yes, that's true. But there's been lots of female practitioners of Vajrayogini. Mm-hmm. What about
Three Visions practice?
Lamdre. What about Lamdre?
Yes,
what's the particular noteworthy thing about her and Lamdre?
Well, she gave the Lamdre teachings when she was 18 years old.
Yeah, that's pretty noteworthy, I would say.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah. Now, I'm sorry, because I haven't taken the Lamdre myself. It's a big hole in my resume.
Okay. We'll forgive you. Yeah. She has actually given the Lamdre. Lamdre masters are very few and far between, believe me. Mm-hmm. And she gave it when she was 18. Mm-hmm. So she holds that historical noteworthiness. And as you said, there are young Jetsunmas, one of which is actually in the training program to become a Sakya Treason. And she, I believe it was last year, became the first female to dance the Vajrakilaya ceremonial dance, mm-hmm. which is a very ancient mm-hmm. ceremony that's been done for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years mm-hmm. without fail. Every year, mm-hmm. and she became the first female to do that. And then she has little sisters that, mm-hmm. when they get older, we'll see what happens. But the point being that the door is open; it's not historically shut like it was. And but also historically, as Karen said, there have been not many, but there have been quite a few historical figures in various lineages that were female that Sakya has produced, so to speak. Mm-hmm. As well, there's the Sakya College, which is for monks, which is the philosophical college, the very high philosophical college. But there's also the Sakya College for nuns, which is the exact equivalent for nuns. Mm-hmm. So you have one for monks and one for nuns. Exact same training program, text that they study, and it's as rigorous. It's extremely rigorous. I had the good fortune of visiting both of those places when I was in India, and I saw how hard they work.
Yes, they do.
It's an incredibly difficult program, but there's equal opportunity there mm-hmm. for
and
both.
And Jetsuma will become the abbess of the nunnery.
Sorry?
When she grows up, Jetsuma will be the abbess.
Of the Sakya College for Nuns?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's what, 16?
Yes, about 16.
Yeah, so she's got a few more years. Okay, so, well, we got through that paragraph. I wasn't sure how that was going to go. There's a very similar paragraph in Shanti Deva's book, and usually when we get to that one, it's like, depending on who attends that evening, you know, there's some enthusiastic discussions. So, okay. So therefore, one should abandon all thoughts of attachment, there it is again, to desire for objects of desire, which are the root of all misery. And there's Shantideva, and what does he say? He says, desire produces misery in this life and also in others. Here one is killed, bound, and cut, and for the next life one accumulates the karma of rebirth in the hells and the like. Okay, so that is the section on suffering of not being satisfied by desire and the attachment that it produces. So now we get to the suffering of never being wearied of birth and death. Who would like to read Nagarjuna's letter for training?
I'll read it.
Mm-hmm.
There is no region in which I have not dwelt, nor any valley of living beings in which I have not been conceived. From measureless eons ago until the present, due to the power of karma and afflictions, one has continued to roam about in the various types of birth and worldly existence. There is neither a region into which one has not been born, nor any sentient being in whose womb one has not been conceived, nor a single one of the many species of the six kinds of beings into which one has not been born. If one could gather together in one place the bones one has accumulated through again and again being born and dying into just a single species of being, they would be higher than the world of Brahma. And if one were to make a pellet of dust the size of a juniper tree seed for each of one's mothers, still this great earth would not suffice to represent the quantity of those who have been one's mothers.
So, and then continuing, letter to a friend says,
everyone has had a pile of bones so large as to equal or surpass Mount Meru. Also, the earth will not suffice for counting pellets as big as the seeds of juniper trees to equal the mothers one has had.
Okay, and then we have another reference from the songs of Jetsun Rinpoche, Dakpa Gyaltsen. These songs we've talked about before, these are songs of experience that just arise from the experience that they have. Would somebody like to read what he has to say?
And contemplating the suffering of the conditional nature of all things, there is seen no end to actions, suffering to exist among many and among few, and suffering to exist among the rich and the poor. All of human life is exhausted in busyness, and everyone dies while being busy. Since busyness does not even end at the time of death, one grasps the beginning of the next life's busyness. Those who are attached to this world of existence, which is a heap of suffering, are pitiful.
Wow. Have a nice day. Busyness does not even end at the time of death. One grasps the beginning of next life's busyness.
Does that apply if you're like going into an animal rebirth or something like that? Like if you're... How does that even make sense? You don't know where you're going next, do you?
But animals are busy.
Are you saying, because our hungry ghosts, like everybody's busy? Is that what you're saying?
Most of those beings are busy finding food. That's the main thing they do.
Yeah, staying alive, surviving.
Surviving.
Mm-hmm. So it's...
copulating.
Finding safety.
Huh?
Finding safety.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Raising her.
Imagine
young
being born a zebra in the first 2 hours of one's life. You have to learn to get away from a lion.
Because if you don't, you're
not
for it.
You're lunch.
Right. Right.
actually, all animals have to do that.
Exactly.
Pretty much when they're
born. Pretty much.
Got to be ready to go.
Yeah, that's busy.
And then his last line, those who are attached to this world of existence, which is a heap of suffering, are pitiful, who are worthy of compassion. Mm-hmm. They don't even know. We don't even know what we're doing. We're ignorant. Continuing, would somebody like to read?
I'm happy to continue. In brief, this worldly existence is like an ill person who never recovers, a prison from which one is never released, and a traveler who never arrives. Whatever one may do, wherever one may dwell, whomever one may associate with, whatever one may enjoy, these are all never anything but suffering by their own nature. Never anything but the source of suffering. Never beyond the wheel of suffering. Thus it must be known. Like the vigor needed to put out a fire blazing on one's head or clothes, the wise must diligently practice the methods of attaining liberation from the prison of worldly existence. For there is nothing to be accomplished that is more important than
okay, I think there's a couple lines here worth contemplating anyway. Does anyone have a favorite line they want to underline for us or call out?
Well, like the vigor needed to put out a fire blazing on one's head or clothes. Yeah. I don't think we all see it that way. I don't see it that way at this point in my life. Like,
yeah.
Now I'm starting to see it.
Yeah.
But even then, it's kind of like there's so many distractions, and it's like a few years ago, when I started working with Herman Tzu, it was like a battle within me. It's like, do I really want to focus on this, or do I want to focus on, like, building what I get from society, like, the information from society? And it just seemed like two different worlds, and it's like, whoa, this is intense. Like, what do I choose? Is this even real? Am I making this? Is this even real? Like, that choice in itself. But now I'm starting to see that it is an actual choice, and I do have to decide what I want for myself. So it's interesting.
Yeah.
What fifth generation Shaolin descendant? Yeah.
Chinese.
Shaolin.
Mm. Well, what came to mind immediately is what happened in Lytton a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Within such a short time, the entire town was burned. And no one anticipated that would happen. In a way, we are all walking in our sleep. We've been in denial of climate change. We've been in denial of our own situation, that we are, in fact, on a precipice every time we make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so enlightenment really means waking up.
Mm.
To wake up. How do we create the conditions to assuage the suffering of where we are now, given the denial that we all have?
Mm-hmm.
So I think of fire, a blazing fire. If we could take what happened in Lytton, bang, just like that, and realize we're exactly there
mm-hmm.
now.
Yeah.
It's not tomorrow or next week.
Mm-hmm.
It's now.
Mm-hmm.
Or just atomic bombs being put on Nagasaki and Hiroshima. I mean,
exactly.
There's another example.
Yes.
Endless greed, billionaires.
Endless, yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's all around us.
I also find personally that it seems like if I put my focus on this, it's almost like I lose connection with the world that I am in every single day. Because most people that I work with and that I'm surrounded by do not have this mind, and that you're just kind of like an alien. I don't know. That's interesting too.
Yeah, no, I think feel
that's
the same
one,
way.
That's one of the reasons why I haven't actually committed, is because it's like, then you lose connection with the world, except here, which is a very...
No, I don't think you do. I think they're not either or. It's also and.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many. I've taught my whole life, and I've never hesitated to speak of spiritual things within the context of my classroom. Because every being... has that seed. Some beings may be unaware of it.
Mm-hmm.
You all have the seed.
Good for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think.
So you mustn't ever be afraid or think you're alien. You don't know what others are thinking.
That is true, I do not.
But I think you mean more just that other people are into it and think they're happy and enjoying it. And
yeah, I mean, there's things that I say sometimes
it,
that people...
You see it for what it is. And
people look at me like, what the hell? And I'm just like, oh, did I, like, disconnect? I don't know. It just...
Never worry about that.
Okay.
Never worry about that.
Sometimes I've heard people say, oh, you Buddhist, all you talk about is suffering. What a drag. I mean, what about flowers and babies crying happiness and blue skies and ice cream cones? But there are four noble truths, and suffering is only the first. And we haven't even finished that one. But eventually we get to the point where we're going to cultivate compassion for those people and for all the people that are childish and worldly and haven't had the opportunity that we've had. And that's the motivating factor to attain enlightenment for the sake of all beings. So don't quit yet. There's still three more truths to go. Three and a half. And it gets better. Don't worry. It gets better. By the way, what are the four noble truths? Suffering.
Cessation.
Cause. What's the third one?
Cessation.
Cessation. And?
The path.
Path. Suffering, cause, cessation, path. Okay. Massive teachings behind those, but those are the four words. Okay. Okay, so where are we? We're on Letter to a Friend. The world of existence is such, so birth is not good among gods, men, denizens of hell, hungry ghosts, and animals. Realize that birth is a vessel of many harms. As you would abandon all other activities to put out a fire if suddenly caught hold of your clothes or head, so strive to put an end to rebirth, for there is no other aim more excellent than this. So remember, we're cultivating renunciation in here. That's what we're doing all this for. Who would like to continue reading?
Therefore, it is very important to produce a mind wishing to practice the holy Dharma in order to attain liberation from worldly existence. As it was said in the Bodhicharvatara, since formerly and even now I have been devoid of the liking for religion, such wretchedness as this has happened, who would forsake the liking for religion?
Okay, so now next is the suggestion for contemplation. So we always get this at the end, so we have a meditation manual here. So who would like to read what we need to contemplate? Or you can continue.
Okay.
Yeah.
To reflect the meaning of this, one should contemplate the following: until it is felt upon one's flesh and in one's bones. Alas, for many lifetimes, due to my thinking that the grasping aggregates were to be cherished. As many conditional activities as I have performed have, like ripples, only created that many sufferings. There's not even a little something about which I can say, this is the result of my hard work. Though I have carelessly utilized various outer and inner objects of desire, not only has my attachment to desire not diminished, but this cherishing of desire has become like piling more wood onto a blazing fire. Though I have taken countless births into the six realms of beings, not only have I not even reached the starting point of the path leading to liberation, but I'm still in a condition of having to continuously roam about in worldly existence. Such a condition was not caused by someone else. I have been deceived by myself. I have been cheated by myself. My own suffering is the result of what I myself have done. I did not believe in the non-deceiving protectors, the preceptors, and the precious gems. I held the suffering nature of worldly existence to be happiness. I held the impermanent happiness of the higher realms to be permanent. I was distracted by conditional activities, which are like ripples of water. I was attached to the seductions of the demon of desirable objects. This condition is caused not by not producing remorse for this contraption of the suffering of birth and death. From now on, in this life, I must throw off like spittle all worldly activities which are without essence. Having directed my mind toward the preceptor and the precious gems, I must enter the path to liberation through relying upon the instruction of spiritual friends. I must unfailingly practice from the depth of my heart the holy teachings which are able to utterly extinguish the fire of suffering.
Yeah. What jumps out for you there?
We've been deceived by our own actions.
Yeah. Nobody did it to us. We did it to ourselves through our own ignorance. Mm-hmm. Right? It keeps coming back to that one, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And then out of that ignorance, we do all this crazy stuff, like attachment. Anything else jump out? How about contemplate until it's felt upon one's flesh and in one's bones? Remember we talked in the very beginning about listening, contemplation, meditation? Which of the three makes it felt in your bones?
Meditation.
It's the meditation, when you really get it deep. You contemplate, this is the contemplation part, and then what you do, you take the summary and you meditate that on that in analytical meditation, so it goes in really deep. So you don't have the doubt, you don't have the distraction, you don't forget it, because it's part of you. It takes time and practice, but in your bones.
Comes like your own name.
Your own?
Name.
Name, yeah.
That's deep.
And how about the end where it talks about relying on spiritual friends?
Mm-hmm.
What's that about? Can we do it alone?
No,
pretty tough.
Yeah,
can you imagine? What's that?
Not recommended.
Not recommended. The Mahayana can't be done alone. Yeah, so.
Is there a tradition that can? Because you did say Mahayana.
Well, the foundation path, there is a subdivision called the Solitary Realizer, but it doesn't take you to enlightenment, it only takes you to liberation. So it's not, from our point of view, it's not a complete path. It's a
partial
foundation path, or whatever you want to call it. But this is a Mahayana text, and that's why there's this emphasis on Guru, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Yeah.
It's also kind of like not knowing short if you don't know tall, right? So if you only know short, you're pretty limited in your knowing, right?
I'll have to meditate on that one.
Say it in different words.
It's a context, right? Like, how do you know what you're learning is correct if you have nothing to compare it to? Or
so you need somebody to show you.
Yeah, and or to discuss it with, or to offer another point of view.
Makes
or
sense.
That kind of thing.
But even more than that, remember when we talked about the three realms, desire, form, and formless? What did we say about form and formless? How do you end up there?
Through meditation, but it's not correct meditation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how do you know you're doing it right?
Yeah. And the answer is?
You need to be with someone
who... experience realizations if you're doing it right.
You need a guru.
You
yeah.
need who knows more than
that's why
you.
We have teachers.
Who's been there. You need to be with someone who's...
Yeah, and also knows you and that. Knows, okay, you're doing that, don't do that, do this.
Yeah.
Right? If you, drive your car in the ditch, you're in the ditch.
Right.
So, okay. Okay, so who would like to read now?
I will.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking thus, with intense faith and devotion, pray, may the preceptor and the precious gems see to it that I practice the holy teaching leading to the path of liberation.
So what kind of prayer is that?
Aspiration.
It's an aspiration. And how do you know it's an aspiration? What's the word that gives it away?
May.
May, when you see that word may. So we're aspiring, we're planting those seeds, yeah? May the preceptors and the precious gems see to it that I practice the holy teaching leading to the path of liberation. So we're putting our faith and our aspiration and our trust in the... That's why you need to have a good teacher, but you also need to check out the teacher to make sure they're a good teacher. Okay, so, but that's another topic. Do you want to continue?
Sure. One should meditate until one has such experiences as tears coming to one's eyes, involuntary moans from one's voice, the hairs on one's body should stand up, and the like. If such experiences arise, one should, without stopping the experience, merge it with the object of one's meditation and meditate. This produces an uncontrived mind that desires to attain liberation from worldly existence.
So that's your third step, your meditation step. There it is right there in a nutshell. And also, that's when it goes in your bones, when you have goosebumps and tears and so on and so forth. It's going in deep at that point, right? Okay. Would you like to just continue?
Sure, yeah. In conclusion, dedicate the roots of one's virtue. Through being endowed with alertness and mindfulness in all activities, one should conceive of the world of existence as a prison and liberation as a fine mansion. With such a conception, one should diligently work on the method which turns whatever one does, whether listening, contemplating, or meditating, into a remedy for the sufferings of worldly existence. The benefits of reflecting thus are from the mouth of Jetsun Rinpoche Dagpa. If one arrives at the conclusions that no happiness exists wherever one may be born in the realms of living beings, then all of one's actions turn into religious practice.
So I have a question.
Mm.
The word religion comes up a lot, and I'm wondering why the term dharma isn't used, but religion is.
This is my guess, that this was translated some years ago. In the early 80s, maybe. And times change, words change, and probably today it would be some word like spiritual path or I
but
don't know.
But not the Dharma specifically.
Or Dharma, yeah.
Because that's a long time word, right?
Yeah, yeah. So every once in a while, we've seen words too that maybe we would probably use a different word today, but. Not to criticize the translators, it's a heck of a hard job. But language changes, and yeah, I mean, every time I see religion, I have the same thought.
Mm-hmm.
I just sort of translate it in my mind as spiritual path or dharma. Or
the culture changes.
Culture changes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's one thing I wanted to mention here. Oh, in conclusion, dedicate the root of one's virtue. Now, we've talked about this before. What have we said about that? What is that about?
Gaining merit.
We've gained the merit by doing all this, and then what do we want to do with it? We're going to keep it, it's all mine, I don't want you to have any. I worked really hard to get this, and I studied, and I went to that class on Thursday night, and it's mine. Or?
Practice generosity.
To who?
All sentient
beings, yeah, spread it around. And what happens when you give it away? Does it go down or does it go up?
It goes up.
Paradox, huh? So why be selfish? Dalai Lama said a true selfish person is altruistic. Yeah, so we dedicate at the end of any practice. So remember in the beginning of Refuge, on the chapter of Refuge, a long time ago, we said there's three parts to any practice. Remember that? What's the first part?
Listening.
First part is?
Taking refuge.
Refuge. We always go for refuge. Second part is whatever practice we're doing. In this case, we're studying a text. It could be saying mantras. It could be doing a sadhana. It could be doing circumambulations. There's gazillions of practices. Whatever our practice is the middle part. So refuge. The main practice, and then
dedication.
The dedication, the spreading of the merit around. Yeah. That's what bodhisattvas do.
It's also a great way to take advantage of impermanence, because you're going to lose it anyway. So you might as well take advantage of it.
That's right. I think of it as a spiritual retirement plan. You know,
you're
putting in your RSP, and then later. And what else? And then the final line of Drapa Ganzi says, if one arrives at the conclusion that no happiness exists wherever one may be born in the realms of living beings, then all of one's actions turn to religious or spiritual practice. But wait a minute, we just spent the last hour saying that worldly activities were a waste of time. What gives here?
But this is what we have to work with. So.
Worldly activities?
Well, this is where we are, right? No, but I mean to practice here in the world.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Existence. Worldly activities are a waste of time. Isn't that a contradiction? Did he get it wrong?
No.
How do you resolve it?
Well, you renunciate worldly activities and focus on yourself.
Yeah, but I got to go to work tomorrow, and I got to buy groceries, and I got to pay the car payment. I got to do that.
Do you?
Those are worldly activities.
Yeah, we have to.
So?
At this point, this is all we have to work on.
Do I have to quit my job to be a Buddhist?
No.
Well, then how do I resolve
it? Turn them into practice.
Ah, 10 points in the back there. But how?
With mindfulness,
awareness.
Okay.
Generosity, patience, effort.
Compassion.
Oh, these are such big words. I'm just a simple guy.
6 perfections.
Everything out there is our teacher.
Oh, that's so vast.
But it has to do with your state of mind.
Which is small. My mind is small. I can't grasp all these concepts.
It has to do with why you're going to work.
Why am I going to work? I have myself that many times.
Is it just for the money? Or what is the opportunity? It is an opportunity when you go to work. What's the opportunity? That's the key.
What is the opportunity?
Practice.
To share realizations in real time with real people.
Where do you work?
Where do you work?
I'm sorry.
Nicole works in the post office.
Let's. Can be arrogant.
And there were. It was a treasure house of opportunity.
Yeah. Treasure house.
Well, the world we live in is our schoolroom, our classroom.
Okay.
Okay, Michael.
Give it to us. It's not just a world and classroom, it's also our opportunity to share. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is all part of the practice.
Yeah.
Oh, you're all so advanced. I don't know.
I really am curious to see what you're going to say.
Yeah.
Because
yeah. Me too.
Top that,
so Michael. This is not my idea. This is from Sakya Pandita, clarifying sage's intent, which is a different text that we've done here. And there is a very long section in there, pages and pages and pages of examples of how to take very mundane, neutral activities like walking, eating, taking a shower, you know, buying food, anything that you do in your daily life, which would normally be classified as neutral. Can't really say it's spiritual to walk, unless you make it spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we do all these activities normally, the bulk of which are just neutral. But skillful means, bodhisattva, changes all those by thinking mindfully, may all beings walk on the path towards enlightenment. Mm-hmm. Climbing upstairs, may all beings climb towards the higher rebirth and attain enlightenment. Turning on the light, may all beings become enlightened. Eating, may my body be strong so I can practice for the benefit of all beings. We take whatever we're doing and we flip it into an aspiration.
Exactly.
For the benefit of all beings. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be a big, big concept thing. It could be something like a regular activity, huh?
An ice cream cone.
Well, like medicine goes 12 aspirations.
Yeah.
But for everybody, mm-hmm. every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if I say tomorrow one of us wins the lottery, well, one of the great aspirations of Medicine Buddha is that everyone will have great, no one will be without in the whole world, in all the universes. No one will ever be without. That's inspiration.
This is the very first teaching that Geshe Thashi Namu gave me when I was totally ignorant. And I remember him to this day, flicking on the light. I mean, how many times a day do you turn on a light or open your fridge or drive your car or walk or do all these things? All of those neutral activities can be converted into virtuous activities mm-hmm. by the strength of your motivation mm-hmm. and your aspiration. That's why motivation is everything, really, in Mahayana. So thank you for playing this little game with me, but we don't have to make it really complicated. We can have a regular, normal life with a job and whatever else we have in our life, and we can turn those neutral activities into merit. You know, you can actually literally practice 24 hours a day. You can even turn your sleep into practice, which is another topic. So we kind of went on long tonight, but that concludes the very first part of this section, which was entitled, let me get it right, Instructions on the Fault of Worldly Existence in Order to Produce Renunciation. So there's three main sections in this impure vision part of the text, and we finished the first of the three. So I think that'll be where we'll stop tonight. Okay? And then we'll say our dedication. Nam Dei Tam Cha Li Pa Ni Tob Na Ba Di Na Pam Che Te Ke Ga Na Chi Pa Lu Tru Pa Ni Si Pe So Le Lu Wa Tru Wa Shu Jang Chu Sem Cho Grim Po Chi Ma Ge Pa Nam Ke Gu Chi Ke Nam Nam Pa Mi Pa Yon Gong Ne Gung Tu Bel Pa Shu Jang Pa Pa Wo Ji Ta Kam Pa Kuntu Sangpo Deyang Deshinti Deda Kungi Jesu Daloti Yewa Deda Tamche Rabdu Dusu Shubi Gyawa Tamche Chotu Nabagi Dajin Yewe Sawa Vigunkin Sangpo Chuchi Ratu Nyuwargi Changsawa Dang Chuchin Shapadam Jesu Yiran Kushin Soa Yi Gewa Chuse Dagi Chisaka Tam Jezo Pe Jam Chu Chi. By this merit may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may all be free. Citta is precious. May it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen. May it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way, valiant Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit. So do I dedicate all of my own virtues that I may train to be like them. Through this dedication, praise the Supreme, by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever little virtue prosper me, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, beseeching, getting to attain perfect enlightenment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.